This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Do extreme events, from hurricanes to wildfires, wake people up about climate change? A new study out of California finds right-leaning people may change their views if hyper-disasters hit their state. Maybe this is an opening to move away from the culture of high consumption towards more earth-friendly ways. Our guest is Rafi Siddiqui, Assistant Professor of Marketing at Santa Clara University's Levy School of Business. Rafi got his doctorate in marketing. He specializes in what makes people buy things or not. From California, Rafi Siddiqui, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you for having me.
There's been a lot of debate on whether climate-induced disasters will change people's minds, including maybe people who don't believe in climate change. So far, my take is that climate disruption has not been enough to prevent people from voting for climate deniers. But your paper is not at all about votes or elections. It's about buying habits. And so to get the right framing, Rafi, could you remind us why consumption matters so much to the economy and to our future?
Yes, of course. So as you can understand, it's our day-to-day decisions eventually which can have an impact on the environment. So from, you know, switching to less plastics and inducing habits in which we look for materials which will not harm the environment, day-to-day consumption matters there. And if we can switch people's behavior in that day-to-day consumption, then it can go a long way in preventing further harm to the environment from happening. Now, of course, there are considerations where a lot of times, for example, the sustainable versions of products maybe perform inferior, or sometimes they actually perform better than the regular versions of products. They might be more expensive, for example, or they might also be inconvenient. For example, paper straws is a good example. Like, they tend to not work as well as plastic straws, and people might not be able to enjoy their drinks as much if they switch to paper straws. So there are those challenges in convincing consumers to actually switch to sustainable products. The more we learn about the possible influences, the possible interventions that we can do to actually shift consumers and convince them that it's worth the change, the better it would be perhaps in the long run for the environment.
And strangely, your study found people who lean towards conservative politics are more likely to be changed by disasters than those who favor more left or progressive views. Tell us about that, and why do you think this happens?
So if we look at the correlation between climate change beliefs and political ideology, at least in the countries that we examined, which was the United States, countries belonging to Western Europe, and Israel, we found there to be a very strong correlation between climate change beliefs and political ideology. Specifically, those who tend to be more towards the right, they tend to not be less likely to believe that climate change is having an adverse impact on the world, on the environment. So given that, these are most likely to be the people who need convincing that our habits need to change because climate change is actually having an adverse impact on environment in our world. So since leftists, by default, they have strong climate change beliefs usually, they are less likely to, let's say, move even more towards sustainable consumption after experiencing a natural disaster or after the existence of a natural disaster in their community is made salient to them. So that is why we feel like the people who are more towards the right, they have more room to, let's say, increase their sustainable consumption by default, whereas leftists, by default, perhaps are already at a high enough level where further nudges are less likely to have a meaningful impact.
That's really helpful. So also fascinating in your November 2024 study led by Rebecca Che, the way people react to extreme disasters also depends on regional circumstances. What did you find different in Central and Eastern Europe versus Western Europe?
That's actually a fascinating thing that our investigation found. And essentially our investigation, like I just mentioned, that this effect, it relies on that correlation being there, that the climate change beliefs are correlated to political ideology, which drives this effect. Now, let's say that was not true, that climate change beliefs has no correlation with political ideology. Then in that case, there shouldn't really be a difference, perhaps, between rightists and leftists in terms of whether their sustainable consumption increases when they feel more vulnerable to natural disasters. And that's exactly what we found in Central and Eastern Europe. as past research has already documented, since that region has developed, most of the countries in that region have developed politically in a different way compared to Western Europe, for example, because of the post-communist context of that region, this traditional correlation between climate change beliefs and political ideology is not present over there. Now, because of that, we don't see this interaction effect over there where people who are more towards the right are more likely to increase their sustainable consumption after feeling vulnerable to a natural disaster. So, yes, so it's basically essentially because that association is not present there between climate change beliefs and political ideology that we don't see the effect over there.
And we've been talking about sustainable consumption. Does that mean buying less stuff than before or less than the average American or truly sustainable globally if everybody consumed that much? How do you define sustainable consumption for this paper?
So that is a great point. So sustainable consumption, as you said, can manifest perhaps in different ways. One is that we reduce the quantity of our consumption, that we stick to the bare necessities and we don't overly indulge. And we don't buy products unnecessarily, and we generally create less waste. The other way to think about it is that there are some products that we definitely need to buy. So, for example, we need cars for transportation, at least in most places. A car is required for people to go from one point to the other point. We need to consume food. We need to consume products which involve packaging. So when we, in this investigation at least, we're focusing on that, okay, assuming that consumers actually need these products and they will continue buying these products at a certain level of quantity, can they actually shift their intentions towards a more sustainable version of this? So if it's kind of like if I buy 10 of this item, then keeping that quantity consistent, can I at least buy 10 of this item that is actually more sustainable overall?
I was surprised to find a whole field of study into consumer virtue and consumer vice and how to influence them. Could you explain what those are?
Yes, absolutely. So we can think of virtues and vices as products which differ in terms of whether they have long-term benefits or long-term costs or short-term benefits and short-term costs. So we can define a vice as a product which in the short run is going to give us some benefits. So for example, a chocolate cake. In the short run, it's going to taste great. I'm going to enjoy eating the cake in the moment. However, in the long run, I will be aware that, you know, when I eat the cake, it might have adverse consequence for me in terms of my weight or in terms of my health because the ingredients are not healthy. However, if I eat a salad, in the short run, we can think of it as a cost that it's not going to taste great. But in the long run, it has health benefits. The more I eat of salads rather than something more indulgent like a cake, the better it might be for me in the long run with regards to my health. So virtues tend to have short-run costs, relatively short-run costs, and they tend to be relatively higher on long-term benefits. Vices tend to be relatively higher on short-run benefits, but they tend to be also relatively higher on long-run costs. So that's the way to think about them. And vices and virtues, we can think of them in different ways. We can think of them in terms of our food choices. We can think of them in terms of the experiences we choose to have. Like, you know, maybe watching a movie purely for entertainment versus watching a movie which can actually add to our knowledge, that could also be considered as a vice versus virtue choice. So that, in general, that's what we mean by when we talk about vices and virtues in the consumer literature.
You know, I kind of hate being labeled a consumer. You know, using pros and cons, as we do in language, maybe the opposite would be prosumers. And the prosumer actively does not consume. They don't buy much, and if possible, they don't buy anything. But I guess that, if it really spread, would be bad for business.
Right. So again, in these kinds of contexts, there are always two sides. So one is the consumer welfare side, that what is good for the consumer, and the other, like you mentioned, is what is good for the business. So businesses evolve. They figure out new ways of selling their products and new ways of making their profits. So, for example, the shift towards physical media to digital media is a good example where now physical media does not need to be stored on shelves. Anyone can download it, and there's basically infinite supply. So businesses do evolve and adapt over time to changing consumer demand and changing consumer characteristics. They just need to figure out that which way are consumers headed. So, for example, a company like Netflix was able to realize that streaming movies is the future rather than renting movies in a store. So So they were able to get ahead of it and be one of the first movers into the streaming business, and they took advantage of that. So in the same way, if consumers do change their habits towards, you know, being more prosumers, as you put it, and consuming less, then businesses will eventually have to all evolve and adapt to that. So we might think that a move, a consumer switching towards a more sustainable lifestyle, consuming less, being more careful about its purchases might be bad for businesses, but in the end, there will be some, the market will adapt, and they will adapt to evolving consumer needs.
And Rafa, you have a fascinating string of papers looking into the way time influences our buying behavior. Why are advertisers always pushing us to buy now or a limited time offer?
That is actually a great point. And the reason is that the ultimate objective is to create a feeling of time pressure. Consumers, they generally tend to make decisions relying on two parts of our brain. So one part is our emotional, quick decision-making brain, and the other one is our slower, rational side. Now, the slower, rational side, in order for it to function, it needs mental resources. It needs mental resources, and it needs time to think. So what advertisers try to do is they try to make us not rely on that rational side. They want us to rely on our emotions. So that's why advertising, in addition to the phrases you mentioned, they also try to show us the product in a very vivid way to create an affective reaction in us so that to arouse our emotions that, you know, this is something I should buy. So the push towards creating limited time offers, or you might also see it in things like, for example, online retailers doing lightning deals where you have basically half an hour to decide, you know, for example, half an hour to decide on whether you buy this or not, after which the deal will be gone. So it is done to create time pressure and to push our brains towards that quicker decision-making style, which relies more on feelings or our rational decision-making, and quite often we give in to our feelings because ultimately emotions and affect, these are mental processes which make us consider mostly the short run. So taking the example of the chocolate cake again, seeing the cake right in front of us, it creates an affective reaction in us. I can see it. I can start imagining what it's going to taste like. And at that moment, I only become concerned with the short run, that what is going to happen right now in the next 20 minutes when I eat the cake. And my brain does not even go towards the future, that what is going to happen a week from now when I will notice that I have gained weight.
Radio EcoShock.
This field of expert business marketing seems a bit scary. I mean, marketing companies can hire experts to read this research, research like yours, and work it into advertising and sales. It's far less likely that the rest of us will learn about it. Maybe our minds can be manipulated to consume more and so produce more carbon or damage to wildlife and all of that. Can academic work like yours be used for good? I think it can. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely, it can be. And you will see that in marketing journals and consumer behavior journals especially, there is work which relates to how can we get consumers to make decisions that are good for them in the long run. Sustainability research is one example. That's good for the environment, but also it's good for the consumer because ultimately we are citizens of this planet, and consuming in a more sustainable way is going to help the environment and then indirectly the consumer itself. So absolutely, there does exist work which considers consumer welfare. So for example, there is work on happiness, that what leads to consumer happiness. And generally, for example, one of the findings is that experiences make us more happy than material possessions. So there is work existing there, and I do agree with you that getting consumers to learn about this is another challenge, that how can we effectively communicate these findings to the regular consumer. Sometimes press coverage helps with that, so that's one of the ways to get that message across. But yes, there are findings out there, but they are slow to make their way towards the consumer.
I just want to tell listeners about another paper published in November 2024 in Nature. The title is How Natural Disasters and Environmental Fears Shape American Climate Attitudes Across Political Orientation. They have similar findings as your work, but this time they're not really looking into consumption, but beliefs about climate change. They say, quote, results support hypotheses that conservatives demonstrate lower climate concern and that fear of natural and environmental disasters increases climate concern, end quote. So maybe humans have to learn the hard way, but given what California just went through, this could be the real hard way. What do you think it will take to really shift our buying habits and our desire to have a greener life.
I think that's a great point. So yes, unfortunately, maybe it will take a little bit of direct experience, like you said, which can shift consumer attitudes. The other thing, which is the greater challenge, and I'm not sure how soon something like that can happen, but it will require a lot of work, is dissociating ideology with concepts like climate change. I think, unfortunately, when a person's personal political ideology or worldviews start to get associated with their beliefs in climate change because of various reasons, that's where the real problem starts happening. Because, so for example, there's this field in consumer literature about a consumer's identity. So all of us, we identify ourselves with different groups. You know, it could be as simple as the school I go to, the workplace I am at, the city I live in. These are all part of our identity. And part of that identity is also the political group that I align with. And if I'm aligning with a political group which is telling me that, for example, that climate change is not real, then it becomes part of my identity. Now, whether I truly believe that or not in earnest becomes irrelevant. Because I identify with that group, I start behaving similar to that group because I want to maintain group membership. If I show behavior which deviates from the group, I might be, you know, I might think that, okay, they might exclude me from the group, or if I want to maintain my group membership, identify with these people, I have to do the same thing that they're doing. That's the real challenge. If group identity is defined by beliefs in, you know, things that are fundamentally, let's say, harmful to the environment or to the consumer, then it becomes a problem, and then that is harder to overcome, and that will require a change in thought, a change in communication, and more clear, effective communication. I believe there's also some research which says that if an impartial source can be conveyed to the consumer, that this is completely impartial, free from any ideology, it is completely based on independent scientific research, and the scientists are not aligned with any political ideology, then they become more likely to believe those findings. So that's the key thing, that conveying findings in a very, very impartial way and making the consumer believe that these findings are impartial and not aligned with their ideology, then maybe those beliefs based on group identity can actually be overcome.
Rafi, you're in a remarkable spot. You're a relatively young person, at least compared to me, with a changing climate ahead. California is already rocked by extreme events. You teach in a business school in a state where people believe green business is really possible. How do you see your future work unfolding? What are you going to do next?
So my main research area is time. And this then, you know, branches out into things like self-control, which are decisions related to, let's say, the choices people make with regards to whether something is good for them in the long run or bad for them in the long run. And then it extends to things like sustainability, because ultimately sustainability relates to considerations about the future. So one work I am working on is how thinking about the future affects our sustainable consumption decisions. So, for example, one finding in one of my recent experiments is that ultimately when we see sustainable products or we see sustainability cues attached to products, it does make us focus more on the future by default for most people. But when we start focusing on the future, one harm that might have is that we might delay our sustainable consumption, because we might feel like, okay, sustainability, this is making me think about the future, and perhaps because I'm thinking about the future, I don't immediately engage in sustainable consumption. So the context I show that in is intertemporal choice, which is a concept where consumers might face a choice between getting a product now versus getting a product later. So just to give you an example, let's say they were buying a vehicle which is sustainable, which let's say runs on electricity, has a low carbon footprint, and they could buy one now or they could buy one later. So if the sustainability related information with that product is making them think about the future, they might feel like I can wait and delay consumption of this product. Because thinking about the future, they feel like, okay, you know, the future is not, I can still wait for this product. So ultimately, the goal is that, and we also are trying to show that in that project, that if we can make consumers think that sustainability is an issue of the present rather than the future, then this effect of delaying sustainable consumption might go away. Because it's one thing to convey sustainability-related information about our product or in general. It's another thing to to learn, okay, what effect does that have on the thinking of the consumer? So what we want to do ultimately is create interventions, communications, which make people believe that, no, this is actually very real and it's happening right now. This is not something that we are thinking of as a future consequence, that in the future at some point the environment is going to go bad. No, what we need to convey is that's already happened. It's an issue of the present, so that people, when they see sustainable products, they are made to think about the present rather than the future, and that they don't delay their sustainable consumption.
Okay, you've just given me a new slogan, and it is, climate change is now.
Yes.
We won't talk about climate change in the future, and we can really say that looking at what's happening right now. From Santa Clara University, Levy School of Business, we've been speaking with Rafi Siddiqui. He's the assistant professor of marketing there. And you can find links to this new study on disasters and consumption in my show blog, Wednesdays at ecoshock.org. Rafi, thanks for helping us out. I really appreciated talking with you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me, and it was great talking to you.
For Radio EcoShock, I'm Alex Smith.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.